Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Grab your pitchfork, light your torch, and get ready for inciting a riot. Conventional thinking has been warned, because we're going to gather, and we're going to march, and we're going to blow its f***ing house down.
Hello, rioters, and welcome back to episode 137 of Inciting a Riot, the podcast. I would be your left-wing, dirt-worshipping host, Firelight. Today, I am so excited. An episode quite a while in the making. Episode 137, Inciting a Fat Feminist Riot. Today's guest is Paige, the hostess of the Fat Feminist Witch podcast. If you guys are out there listening to pagan podcasts, you are probably listening to her show. We delve into all sorts of topics, why she started her show, sort of the changing landscape of paganism, podcasting in general, and her new book, Green Witchcraft, which comes out today, if you are listening to this on the day that you downloaded the episode. So thank you so much for tuning in. We're going to get straight to this interview because it's quite a bit of it. But I do want to say, before we get going, a big shout out and thank you to anybody who is currently supporting the show on Patreon, patreon.com/incitingprojects. A couple of things I want to tell you guys. If you'd like to support the show, we are going to be changing some things up coming in March of 2020. A lot of the reward tiers are going to get enhanced. You guys are going to start getting things like custom art and postcards and poetry and other cool stuff that's not just extra podcast content, but actual like take home cool stuff for you. So look forward to that. Again, if you'd like to support the show for as little as $1 a month, you can do that at patreon.com/incitingprojects. And now, without any further ado, here's Paige from the Fat Feminist Witch podcast. All right, rioters, I am so pleased, blessed, and thrilled to welcome Paige, the Fat Feminist Witch. Paige, welcome to Inciting a Riot.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited. This
oh my
is like
gosh.
Wild.
I am so excited as well because you are doing big things. You are having your podcasting moment right now.
I really am. It's wild. Like it's, I still can't believe it ever.
I love, you know, I was some of my sort of us old school podcasters that have been around for a while. We're sort of talking about how it feels very 2009 right now, like when a lot of us started in that 2009 to 2011 period when, you know, there were a lot of new shows and a lot of exciting voices. And the problem is with as many shows came out, they all very quickly pod faded and you'd get a couple little nuggets of people that would stay around. And you are just reminding me of what, I mean, an instant classic podcast with an instant message, and it's wonderful, it's clear, it's brilliant, and you are doing wonderful things on the podcasting scene, and I'm so glad that your voice is out there.
Oh, thank you. That's actually like, that's wild, because 2011, I think, is when I started listening to podcasts, and I think I've only really listened to witchy podcasts, so Velma Nightshades was the first one I found, and then that's how I found you, and then I found, like, New World Witchery.
I'm never going to tell her that. It's a really good thing that nobody will ever hear this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, she was like the first podcast I ever listened to. I was in the bathtub, and I was like, oh, this sounds real fun.
She should do more shows, shouldn't she?
Oh my God. You know what? She was just like the perfect intro to witchy podcast because she was like the very like classic 90s Halloween multiple cats like kind of witch. Like I could picture her in my head and I'm like, yeah, this is exactly what I need.
The funny thing is like I think when people have sort of before most of us sort of put our actual faces out there, because there were many, many years in the early years of podcasting when like none of our faces were out there. We all used fake names. None of our faces were out there. It was very difficult to like actually find out who we were and that kind of thing. But like, it's really funny, like when people sort of picture what Velma Nightshade looked like, they're pretty much right. It's just she doesn't really wear as much like purple. And quite as many petticoats on a daily basis. Like that's like a
definitely the like the long like black peasant skirt was like in my head.
Yeah,
I remember Kitty Cat. I remember witchcraft and Wicca in the 90s like so vividly, and she is just like that witch. She is that perfect like 90s witch.
So,
I love that.
For people, for the three people out there that listen to Pagan Podcasts and have never heard of you before, give us your elevator speech. Give us the elevator pitch for what the Fat Feminist Witch Podcast is all about.
It's really hard for me to describe it sometimes because it feels like so personal. But really, it's just I discuss all sorts of manner of using witchcraft in like more modern ways. I try to talk about things that never really made a lot of sense to me. So I've been trying to figure them out. I talk to a lot of different witches that can help me figure stuff out. And I kind of just try to make it accessible for everybody. Like everybody can be a witch. And that's really what I want people to take away from the show.
You know what I love about, I mean, just calling your show The Fat Feminist Witch, I feel like, you know, I really love shows that you know exactly what you're getting from the title. Like, you know, we were talking about Core, you know, New World Witchery.
Yeah.
You know what you're going to listen, you know what you're going to hear when you listen to his podcast?
I know exactly what I'm going to hear.
Witchery from the New World. It's, you know, it's inciting a riot. You're probably just going to hear somebody that pisses you off for an hour.
Right. It sends a clear message.
It sends a very clear message of what you're getting.
I couldn't think of anything else. It was like, I just kept writing like fat, feminist, witch, like as like my general like overview of what I wanted to do. And I'm like, maybe I should just call it that. It took me a while to like say it out loud.
So like what? So I distinctly remember the moment that I was in my car. I hadn't moved to Chicago yet, but I remember listening to a podcast and hearing them talk about something and me thinking, I just need to jump in there and like say something. Like I remember the moment when I was like, okay, I need to do this. I want to do this. This is something I want to do. What was the moment for you that was like, okay, let me go look up microphone prices on Amazon. Like, I obviously need to put my voice out there.
You know what? It's so weird because it's so clear to me now, but at the time I had no idea what I was actually doing. Of course, I had been working at a witchy store. And it was like, it was so beautiful, right? This beautiful, shiny, sparkly, brand new witchy store. You know, the great white buffalo of retail jobs. And I worked there for 6 months, and the first like 4 months were like the best 4 months of my life, right? Aww. Like I totally found my niche, and I was the best, you know, employee. I was talking to everybody. I was learning all sorts of new stuff, and I loved it. But my boss and I just really, really clashed near the end. I don't want to say she's crazy, but she's crazy.
I don't want to name any names, but her name is Susan Jones, and she knows who she is.
But she knows who she is. But it was just too much. I couldn't keep working there, and so I had to quit. And I had already planned a trip to Salem, of course, for like that month. So that was the last day I had, and then I went to Salem. And when I got home, it was like, well, I can't just like stop talking about witchcraft now. Like I'm on a roll here, so I tried to figure out other ways to do it, that there weren't a lot of other stores or anything. Mm-hmm. And I honestly remembered the Pagan Podcast that I'd been listening to in 2011. And that's how I ended up on Podbean, because I'm pretty sure that's what Velma used.
We do.
And that was the only one I knew of. And so I just went and I made an account. And next thing I know, I'm recording a podcast like on my cell phone. Like it all happened in, I don't know, less than 24 hours.
Yeah, it does happen pretty quick. I mean, the decision like, okay, I'm going to do that. And it's crazy how, you know, in the modern age, it's, I mean, your phone, It scares me a little bit how easily accessible an entire recording studio is, because I'm just like, I'm really glad I don't have teenagers, because
people are always like, how did you like get started and source all your materials? And I'm like, it was an old iPhone, mm-hmm. and I recorded it in voice memos, and I mm-hmm. even edited it in there. Like mm-hmm. it was. People don't believe me, but it's so easy to get started.
It is so easy to get started. So yeah. When did you know, like, when did you start, like, people are listening to this and oh my God.
You know what? It took me a little while to believe that people were really listening. Like, I had a few followers within, you know, within the 6 month span, you know, I had a few followers and it was great. And then all of a sudden it just started climbing like regularly, mm-hmm. like every time I put one out, there was more and more and more. And I'm like, oh no, what's going on? And I got a little freaked out and I got slightly cyber bullied. So I took a break. And then since I've come back, it's just been straight shot up. So let's hope that continues.
Well, I mean, obviously you're doing something right, because what are these pictures I'm seeing on social media? All these books? You've yeah. got boxes of books?
So I wrote a book.
You wrote a book.
I wrote a book.
Welcome to the podcasters that have books out there club.
Wow, is that exciting. Like that's another thing that I have a really hard time believing. I keep looking at it and I see my name on it and I'm like, oh my God.
It is such a cool feeling. It is such yeah. a cool feeling to look down at something in the printed word that's like, yeah, that's my name.
And I even like it and I'm proud of it. Like, I was so afraid I'd get it and I'd read it and I'd be like, this is garbage, but it's actually really good. So check it out.
So what's the book? When is it out?
It's called Green Witchcraft. Mm-hmm. And it is out February 25th, which is a Tuesday, according to my calendar up there. But February 25th, 2020. So it's, oh my gosh, it's going to be out by the time this comes out. Isn't
it's soon.
It?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, yeah, like, wait, what day will this come out? I'll tell you real quick. It might come out on release day. That wouldn't what? That be, actually, actually, hey, rioters, it comes out today when you're listening to this today. On February 25th, because it releases every other Tuesday. It's out today.
Yeah, head out to your bookstore.
Go out to your yeah. bookstore. Go to Amazon. Go to a local yeah. witchy shop. Go somewhere.
Oh, yeah, get it absolutely anywhere. Everybody's asking me where the best place is to get it.
A bookstore.
It doesn't matter. Anywhere is great, but I love if you go to the local witchy store and you mm-hmm. request it. If any of your local witchy stores want it and they don't know how to get it, they can go to my website and I have the information there just in case.
So
give me 1 second, okay?
Of course.
Okay, you sir. I know. I'm kidding. Go ahead. I'm not good at discipline as a cat parent. I'm not good at discipline. I cave.
Do we need to get you a Janet Jackson album?
I can't do it. He's crying and he's uncomfortable and I just feel like a dick. Whatever.
So
poor guy.
One of the big things that I love about your show and just sort of the message in general from the title on down to the topics that you cover is a recurring theme of body positivity, of just sort of self-love in general and self-care. And I think, you know, every year there's sort of a theme that I try to abide by, or a lesson I think I try to sort of learn personally. And 2020's seems to be that self-soothing is not self-care.
Yeah.
And
that's a hard lesson.
It is a hard lesson, especially because social media has taught us that self-care is basically yeah. green tea, a fuzzy blanket, and a 90s rom-com.
Oh my God, take a hot bath and you're perfect again.
Take yeah. a hot bath, get a face mask, go do brunch with the girls, like whatever it is, like that is self-care.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that somehow along the way that, you know, it became a meme and then it became a joke and then it just kind of became a serious method that yeah, people try to use for self-care.
It became like a bumper sticker instead yeah. of like a book. Like it just became really, really condensed down into nothing.
And so I just kind of want to meditate on that for a second with you, because what is self-care to you?
Oh, Well, I do love a hot bath, like that really helps. But actually, I had to really learn what self-care was like over the years that I've been doing the podcast. I entered treatment for mental illness, and that was like so hard and really unpleasant for like years. But that was probably the closest thing to real self-care that I had ever gotten to at that point. And it's just, self-care is really hard and it's really scary. And it's like, if you're practicing what you think is self-care, but then nothing's changing, everything stays the same, and you're coming into this same point where you need to soothe yourself, then you're not actually doing anything in the back. So I just, it's kind of about learning and actually learning to let stuff go, which is like a really hard, it's a really, really hard thing to do, to let things go or to move on from something that you've been holding on to for a long time.
So I appreciate your honesty there. And I think, I feel like Alice sometimes, where I'm like, you know, I have very good advice, but I don't normally take a lot of my own advice. And I know that, you know, I was always a big advocate for, you know, go to therapy, see your doctor, all this stuff. And actually finding a therapist and going is first of all, that is self-care.
Yeah.
You know, just taking the step
to find one is so difficult.
It is difficult. And I'll tell you, you know, I was successful in that I was able to go to therapy, but unsuccessful in that the therapist that I went to was not great, or at least not great for me. And, you know, realizing that the kind of therapy or the kind of work that you need is different, and being able to say, okay, well, this isn't for me, I need to keep looking, that kind of thing. But, you know, you said that you entered treatment, and if you don't mind, just because you talked about it and you have been so open about it, what made you go? And what did you get out of it?
Okay. So what made me go was that my life has never been going the way that I want it to. Like, just when I look at my past in my 20s and stuff, I was not the person that I wanted to be. And I realized that like kind of late. And I also had a kind of difficult childhood that left me with just, you know, just some mental illness issues that had reached this point where I was no longer, like, I couldn't leave the house, and I was gaining a lot of extra weight and not noticing. And it was mostly that I wasn't noticing my body was changing. You know, I wasn't putting on makeup or looking the way that I normally do. Like, I had just given up, and I was 30 years old. Like, that's outrageous. Mm-hmm. And my sister moved to town, and she's like, okay, we gotta do something about this. Like, I had no idea things were so bad. And I found this 3-week treatment program. And I decided, whatever, I'll just, you know, all I'm doing right now is the podcast. I didn't have a job outside the podcast. I figured I have 3 weeks to spend on this.
This was fairly recent then.
Yeah, this was 2017. So, oh my God, that's like 3 years now. But yeah, so I was there for 3 weeks. And from there, I've been bouncing around from community organization to community organization, trying to find therapy and drugs and treatment. And man, it was a lot of work. Actually, talking about it all the time on the podcast, like, really, it made the entire process just a little bit easier, because I had people all the time messaging me like, yeah, trying to find mental health care is like, you know, it's an absolute uphill battle. I know how it is. It sucks. So just keep trying. It really helped out a lot.
I mean, luckily, in Canada, being where you are, you do have a little bit more access than we do here in the States.
A little bit. But you know what I learned? I learned that therapy is not covered. If you can find a psychiatrist specifically, that will be covered. But an actual, like, a psychologist or social worker, any of that, not covered at all. And we also apparently have a psychiatrist shortage. Super fun. I wonder
That's
why.
Fun.
I wonder why. Maybe it's because they only get paid public dollars, right? So there's that. And I had some trouble with some of the community organizations. It's just, it's very easy to fall through the cracks because there's so many people right now. So many people that need help. And it was I just kept slipping through cracks and slipping through cracks, and it was so frustrating. So frustrating.
So what do you tell people who don't feel seen? Because I'll tell you, you know, some of the things that you're saying sort of resonate with a much younger version of me, and to an extent, sort of the darker current version of me. But, you know, I grew up, you know, the obviously gay kid in a really small, very conservative, very religious town.
Yeah.
And I, you know, suicidal ideation and, you know, harmful thoughts. And, you know, I had a plan to kill myself. I mean, it was, you know, I know what it's like to hate the person in the mirror. And, you know, any resources that you went to, you know, I was bullied endlessly in school. And the only therapy that I was ever sent to was a Christian therapist who tried to pray the gay out of me to fix that. I understand what it's like to go through decades of your life and just not feel seen.
Yeah.
And it sounds like maybe that is some of the same feelings that you had or have, or that you have experienced. So do you, you know, from the work that you've done and that you continue to do and the message that you give on your show, you know, what is something that you can pass on to others who also don't feel seen?
That is like just the best way to say it, because that's really how I felt for a long time. Like, I felt like no one saw me the way I thought that I was. You know, I wasn't presenting who I wanted to be, but people also just weren't seeing it even when I did. Mm-hmm. When I worked in that witchy store, I'd never even really been good at sales or anything before, right? Like, it was like totally wild to just be good at a minimum wage job that much. But I found out that people saw me a lot better when I was talking about these spiritual topics. And it's because when I got into talking about it, spirituality is very personal. You know, it's very personal. And you end up just sharing personal things with somebody when you talk about it. And I started to have people really see me and people really see who I am, and people being able to guess like very kind of intimate or personal things about me. And I realized that I had been trying to be seen by people that just didn't want to. They were never going to see what I wanted. Not everybody can, right? So finding this group of people that could see me as I am, could really understand me, it made me realize that I needed to get into a different kind of crowd. I needed to talk to different people. I needed to share more of this side of myself, because it's obviously something that allows me to connect with other people. And I also found myself not really caring if people liked what I was saying so much. First time ever. When I started the podcast, I got some blowback. Everybody gets some blowback, right? And I just, everybody gets some.
Would you like to see my pile of hate mail?
Everybody gets some blowback. I haven't gotten a lot of really bad stuff, which is great. But at the beginning I got some, and I would read it and I would realize, you know, I just don't really care. Like, I really believe in what I'm saying, and other people seem to believe it. I just don't care. And I'd never felt like that before. I feel like connecting with, finding that, those people to connect with, just kind of allows you to bring that into other parts of your life. Now I care a lot less about what all sorts of other people think about me.
When did you find paganism?
I was 9. It was like, whatever, like 1996. And I'd been reading some fiction book or watching Sabrina the Teenage Witch or something. And, you know, I just casually went into the kitchen and told my mom, you know, oh my God, I wish I could be a witch for real. And I'm sure she saw it on Oprah or Jenny Jones or something. She's like, you know, there are some people that are like real witches. It's not like, you know, in the movies, but, you know, they're real witches and they worship a goddess and they love nature. And I was like, oh, hold up. That sounds like it's for me. So she took me to the library where I could use like an old computer and look it up on the web and rent some books to take home. And I've just been a witch ever since.
Oh, man, that is such a, like, a Canadian white mom response. Like, oh, honey, oh, yeah, you wanna be a witch, eh? Let me take you to the library.
And I'm sure no one was surprised. I was already, like, a very artsy nature.
Do you like my Canadian accent? Was that an accurate Canadian accent?
It was. It's not super accurate for here because I live next to Detroit. So we just sound like we're from Detroit. But everyone I know from Winnipeg sounds just like that.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited that my accent's working.
It's like the Winnipeg, Minnesota. Mm. That cute little like sing song. I love it. I love Canadian accents because I don't have one.
This comes from a single episode of King of the Hill.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Best Canadian representation you could find.
Absolutely. Yep. So you discovered paganism around 9. When did you discover feminism?
That one came a little bit late. You know, I thought I was a feminist kind of the whole time. And I realized in my late 20s that that was so not the case. Just like not at all. And when I started to become more of a feminist, not necessarily on purpose, just it happened, I started to notice how many of my friends really weren't feminist. And I'm like, hold on. I didn't think this feminism thing would get so much blowback. You know, I kind of thought we were feminists. And that gave me the heads up that I was maybe missing something. I didn't listen to any female musicians. I didn't really like movies that were headed by women. I loved hanging out with guys. It was like, I never knew.
What does it mean to you now?
It means pretty much everything. Like it's just, it's another part of that whole, no one ever saw me for who I was. And it's because I wasn't projecting that. Mm. I was not projecting my beliefs and my real feelings just at all. I had no idea. And now it's just, as soon as I found feminism, it's through the internet, I'm sure. It was on the internet. Maybe like Tumblr feminism at first, I'm sure. But, you know, finding other people, it was just all of a sudden like, oh no, this is why I don't get along with other people, because I had no idea what I actually felt or thought about other people at all. Not at all. It's just, I don't know, man. It changed my life. It made me relate to people a lot differently, especially men, although that's not always positive, but that's okay.
So we've talked about how you came to paganism. We've talked about how you interact with the word feminist. I want to talk about the word fat.
Yeah. That's the oldest one.
Really?
Yeah, I've been fat longer than I've been any of those other things. I have always, always been the biggest kid. You know, for a long time I was tall and then I stopped growing. So now I'm kind of short for, you know, whatever, but I'll let it go. But I have always been fat. Always. I started wearing plus size clothes in elementary school.
How do you feel about the words plus size?
Plus size is like, to me, it's clothing. Plus size to me is almost exclusively clothing. And also it's like the most PC term I can think of. I can almost always guarantee that if I refer to someone with a body type like mine as plus size, they're not going to get hurt or triggered or something. You know, fat is hard for a lot of people. I don't blame them. It was hard for me for a really long time. I just had to say it all the time. Be really like, you know, kind of sassy about it. But fat can be hard for other people. So they get to be plus size until they tell me otherwise.
Do you remember the first time you were called fat?
Oh my God, no. I feel like I've always been getting called fat. I don't even, when I look at like pictures of me as a small child, I don't necessarily see a fat kid. I just, whatever. But as soon as I started approaching anything like puberty, it was just, I was fat everywhere. People called me fat all the time. I got bullied in elementary school and then high school came and that stuff just did not matter that much. Anyone who called me fat in high school was already kind of an asshole. So it wasn't shocking. It was never shocking. And I got it into my head that some people are just jerks and they just have a problem. And I've never been able to shake that, even when it makes me mad that so many people are like that. It's just, and I guess that's kind of unique. A lot of other fat girls, you know, they didn't figure that out. They didn't figure out that people were going to be shitty no matter what. So they might as well have a good time. I guess that's just the way that's the way I took it, I guess. But, it became a huge part of who I was. And again, when I started talking about body positivity or fat politics or anything, I noticed that I got a lot of pushback from friends mm-hmm. I never expected would have a problem talking about it. And that, again, tipped me off that maybe I wasn't like living the life that I thought I was. It happens.
You know, I remember, I don't remember the first time I was called gay. I remember I don't even remember the first time like somebody was like, you're such a girl. But I remember that those were the earliest insults.
Yeah.
When we were little, when I was little, the word gay wasn't the word. That came later.
Yeah.
But it was, you're such a girl.
Yeah.
You're such a sissy.
Yeah.
You're you know, and then gay came later. And I remember not feeling any different whatsoever from the other kids. And then one day in eighth grade, as hormones are wont to do, you just start realizing, like, I'm not having the same feelings as other people. I'm not having this, you know, I'm not interested in the same people that the other boys are. And I mean, I didn't feel any different from anybody else. And I don't remember the first time I was called gay, and I don't remember the first time that I was called a girl, and I don't remember the first time for any of those things. I remember it had been happening for as long as I can remember, though. I mean, when I was a kid, one of my great grandmother's prized pictures of me is me holding a Ken doll.
Just I love
close,
it.
Yeah. Just real close. And he had a little purple jacket, and he was going to prom, and it was cute, and he was blonde, and he looked just like me, and I just loved it. And I would always, my uncle's favorite story of me as a kid that I do not remember, so this is like, you know, that early age before you actually start remembering things for a long time.
Like your own prehistory,
you know, was going to the McDonald's drive-thru, and you remember the only time of year you ever wanted to go to the McDonald's drive-thru was during Barbie Hot Wheel
time. Yeah.
Yeah, the Barbie Hot Wheel time was the good, those were the good toys.
Right.
Because, like, everything else was, like, a McDonald's toy, like, which now apparently are quite valuable, and I should have held on to all of those. You know, like,
a collection of the Wizard of Oz McDonald's toys they put out. So I'm going to keep those until they make me rich.
I remember, like, the ice cream cone that, like, turned into a little monster if you pushed it or something.
Man, Happy Meals were the coolest.
They were. But I remember my uncle tells this story of we were in the drive-thru and he was ordering a Happy Meal. And, you know, we got around the corner and they were handing me the Happy Meal, and we get out of the parking lot. I open it up and apparently I just started screaming bloody murder.
Hot Wheel.
Screaming bloody murder. And he's like, what's wrong? And he's like, I want the Barbie. I want the Barbie.
But yeah, the Hot Wheels are fine, but they're boring.
And so I would not stop until he took me back to McDonald's, and we go inside. And walk up to the counter, and he said, yeah, I need to exchange this for the Barbie. And they said, oh, I'm sorry, I thought you had a little boy with you. And he's like, I did too. And I laugh now, and I think, oh, God, I'm sure you probably actually said that.
I'm sure he probably actually did.
And, you know, and it's funny, and you know, out of everybody in my family, he's still probably the best version of a familial ally as I will ever have. But,
cute.
I don't remember any of those first, but I do remember the first time that I prayed to not be gay.
Aw, that makes me really sad.
And I remember, I think it was also around eighth grade. It's because I was having way too many dreams at night where the person that I was going to the school dance with was not a girl. It was, you know, one of my friend's older brothers, and I was just very in love with him. And the reason why Tom Welling is my secret Hollywood husband is because he looked just like my friend's older brother at the time.
Oh my God.
Very into Tom Welling. This recent CW Arrowverse crossover that brought Tom Welling back did a whole lot for me. I'm just letting you know.
Oh my God, do you watch Lucifer?
I technically have watched Lucifer. I'm not like I don't binge.
Tom Wellington is in it in the like most recent season, and his arms are like massive, and it's like a thing throughout the whole hilarious season. And every time it came up, my sister and I were just like, "Oh my God!"
Yeah, he's so hot. He's my baby daddy.
Superman. Yeah.
But I remember the first time that I prayed to not be gay, and I remember that it was at a Christian youth conference, and we're in this giant arena. And, you know, oh, lift up your prayer requests and God will hear you, blah, 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 and all that stuff. Of course, I prayed to wake up straight. I prayed to wake up straight for the next, like, 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I say all of that and ramble all of that to ask this. Do you remember or did you ever have a moment where you prayed to wake up skinny?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if this was the first time I ever really thought about it or not, but I have an old Book of Shadows from like 2000. Oh my God, that's so long ago now. And there are actually like little weight loss spells in there and like spells to let out your inner beauty and spells to be seen as more beautiful. Like it's such a sad little Book of Shadows to look through, because you can just see that it belonged to like a very sad like preteen girl. It's like reading an old diary. But I definitely like prayed to some goddesses all the time that I would just, I don't know, that I would just wake up and lose weight, because I did not want to go on a diet or like start running or anything. Like I wasn't willing to do any of that. But I just didn't want to be fat anymore. And if I had to be fat, I just wish people could shut the fuck up about it. Like that's been my dream my whole life, is just that people would stop bringing it up all the time, like in a mean way or to make me feel like I need to be afraid to do something. Like, unless there's like a really low weight limit on something, I can do whatever. I'm not going to do like a ropes course with a weight limit of like 100 pounds, but otherwise, like, I can do whatever. And I just kind of always wish people would stop thinking I was super different because of it. I still wish that a lot. That people could just, I don't know, like see fat people as normal. And a lot of people do, obviously, but it's not people, it's a few people. So people still see fat people as not people.
You know, a lot of the discussion that I hear around, you know, like you were talking about doing spells to bring out the inner beauty.
Yeah.
You know, praying to certain goddesses of love and beauty.
Oh, yeah.
And so on and so forth. A lot of it brings back a conversation that I had years ago with, she was Sophia at the time, and she's Naomi now. She, wonderful podcaster and disability activist, who talked to me about the idea of, you know, if we stop seeing color, if we stop seeing race, if we stop seeing this, if we stop seeing that, we stop seeing the need to be, the need to celebrate differences, the need to celebrate how we are each unique and individual, and sometimes deserving of you know, being treated differently.
Yeah.
And I wonder sometimes she also talks about the pagan problem of healing. And this is a problem in a lot of other religions. This idea of praying for healing, praying away the disability, praying away, you know, the thing that makes you, you.
Yeah.
You know, doing spells for a healthy body, doing spells to become beautiful and that kind of thing. Do you find in the pagan community that we have this sort of image of what the goddess looks like, or what beauty really means whenever we say to do a spell for beauty?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's just, well, first of all, most of the goddesses that were popular in Wicca and witchcraft when I was learning were white. Mm. Most of them were Mediterranean, which I also am, so that kind of worked out for me. But they were white, and they looked a certain way. And there are some like fat goddesses, but they're like, you know, like the Venus of Willendorf, which is a statue, not like a living, beautiful person. And there are fat goddesses in myths, but there's not paintings or anything of them. And it was just, I don't know. It was a lot of praying to the goddesses that are very conventionally beautiful. You know, like I was praying to like Aphrodite and Venus. I wasn't praying to some obscure, beautiful, fat goddess because that wasn't possible. Like that wasn't a thing. And that was not just me. Like I've noticed that there are a lot of fat witches out there. Mm. A lot of people in the pagan community around here are fat, but I also live in like what is known in the US as the Midwest. And we just have a lot of fat people here in general. It's just how it is. It's cold as hell. So I'm not surprised because it's cold as hell, but we have a lot of fat people here, and the pagan communities in other parts of Canada are not like that. They look very different. And that's where you see all of these other very conventionally beautiful people, not necessarily always the men, but a lot of conventionally beautiful women, especially. And it just, I don't know. It just didn't seem like there was a place for me. Like it kind of seemed like it was the magazine version. Mm. And they were always, you know, praying for healing and praying for things to change in your body. And there was never this idea where just leave your body the way it is and maybe pray to a goddess that you're happy about it. Like it wasn't a thing to ask to just be happy about it. You were always trying to heal something or get rid of something, you know, throw it in the fire and get rid of it, or jump over the fire and get rid of it, or light a fire and get rid of it. We love fire.
Oh, thanks. I love you too.
We love fire. So it was always a thing to get, one of the things to get rid of or to ignore. You know, I knew a lot of older pagan ladies who were fat, who were just like, my body just houses, you know, my spirit. And so I just don't think about it at all. I'm just totally cut off from it. And I'm like, oh, that seems like not good either. Like these seem like two sides of the same exact problem, mm-hmm. just that you're disconnected. I don't think I'd want to be, first of all, I don't think it's possible for me to be thin. Like I said, I've been fat my whole life. So I don't have like a default thin page to look back on. She don't exist. This is the default. So I think that makes it a little bit easier for me. But now I can't imagine waking up one day and being thin and being the same person. The way I see and experience the world is just different. And some of that sucks. Some of that sucks real bad. But a lot of it doesn't. You know, it's really great to find people who don't hate other fat people, whether you're fat or not. Mm-hmm. I just happen to find more of them because I am fat. So that's nice. I get to meet a lot more people that are just kind of naturally body positive or already body positive, I guess. You know, there's lots of good things about being fat, and I can't imagine being any other way. I would never pray to any goddess to take that away now. I still might ask for me to feel better about it or for people to stop being jerks about it, but that's about it. I think that's as far as I'd go.
Do you remember when the word fat stopped feeling like a dirty word to you?
Sort of. It happened over time.
Yeah.
It happened over a long time. I would say almost the entirety of my 20s. I feel like I started really forcing myself to say it when did I go to college? Like around 2012, mm-hmm. I decided I was going to start saying fat to talk about myself. And for years, I still never heard anyone else use the word fat to refer to me, unless it was some kind of jab. But people still didn't use it. Bigger, plus size, whatever, right? They have their own words. And actually, this year is the last time I heard someone say the word fat to me, mm-hmm. about my body. And it was just a normal conversation. And they were just using the word fat normally. And I was like, he has no idea how big of a deal that was.
Married him, and his name is Jeffrey Fat Feminist Witch, and he is now living with you.
He's like my best friend. He lives like right around the corner. It's great. It was just wild. And he was talking to me about Thor wearing the fat suit in the Avengers movie. So like that wasn't that long ago.
That was last year. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, that might be a little bit of a problem. He also warned me about another movie. He's like, I don't think you'd really like that. There's this whole big fat suit situation. I'm like, okay, cool. Thanks for the heads up. But yeah, that was a huge deal. So it's been like since five, 6 years that I've been saying fat. And within the last 6 months, it was the first time that someone else like used it in a normal way. It takes a long ass time.
So like me, you are a huge fan of just pop culture.
I am. I'm a sucker for it.
In general.
Yeah,
so I'm a sucker. To transition into a conversation about pop culture, when was the first time you felt seen in media?
Oh
visual
my God.
Media. We're not going with books here. I don't wanna have a headcanon like, about some
trying to think about it. All of my, you know, media or cartoon heroes as a kid were all skinny. Like Sailor Moon was not just skinny. She was skinny and like all leg, right?
You Can know? I just say, for some reason, like, it's so funny how many people like tag me in Sailor Moon things, just sort of assuming that I'm a big fan.
You never watched it?
I never saw it growing up. And I tried to watch it a couple of years ago as an adult. And I'm like, oof. I'm sorry, babes, but this doesn't hold up as an adult to watch it for the first time.
Going back and watching it for the first time as an adult, all that old anime is so wild now.
It's rough, girl. It has no plot. It has no plot.
And the voices make me want to drag, like, put something through my ears. Mm-hmm. But as a child, you know, they were the only girl superhero team, and they used magic and loved space. I was like, fuck yeah.
See, I was a Power Ranger.
Oh, I loved Power Rangers.
I wanted to be Billy and marry Jason. And I pretty much wrote that in my childhood diary.
Yeah, yeah. I also wanted to be the Pink Ranger gymnast, Kimberly, and also marry Jason.
And I
think you would have actually gotten to marry Jason, though. Like, you would have had more of a chance.
Yeah. First of all, I love that you wanted to be a Kimberly and that you are not a Tommy. Yeah. And that you're like, I don't want anything to do with Tommy.
I loved him, but like, no.
And still to this day, though, my favorite colors are blue and green because those were my favorite Power Rangers. I was a Billy. And then when they changed teams and Billy was no longer a Ranger, my new favorite was the Green Ranger. And then that's to this day, my favorite colors are blue and green. And it can all be traced back to the fact that those were my favorite Power Rangers. Yes. Yep.
My mom thought the Power Rangers was too violent and we weren't allowed to watch it.
Okay. Have you ever gone on a Wikipedia deep dive on how Power Rangers came to be?
No. Oh,
okay,
my God.
Can I give you a 30-second tangent?
Yeah, I'm into it.
Okay. So you will never see, during a battle scene, any of the American Power Rangers take off their helmets.
Okay.
And that is because for every single season of Power Rangers that has ever been made, there are actually two different sets of Power Rangers.
And all the fight scenes are separate?
All of the fight scenes are the Japanese Power Rangers. Yeah. Even the current series of Power Rangers
Shadow
has two different storylines. There's the American storyline that features the American actors. And then there's the Japanese storyline that features Japanese actors. Can I tell you what the original storyline is for the original series of Power Rangers and where the hell Rita Repulsa comes from?
Yes. I'm ready to hear it.
So, the original story for the original set of Power Rangers is that these are like I want to say they're like reincarnated like elven princes and princesses that like live in a cave, and Rita Repulsa is a witch who worships Lord Satan. And so it's these like elves fighting Lord Satan, and like it's, you don't understand. So the crazy amazing thing is sometimes like the monsters and stuff that the American people had to fight, like, you would get into, like, weird situations. Like, I remember one time, like, the Yellow Ranger had to, like, dance on a pig and wave some flowers or something. Because in Japan, that was like a specific ritual that they were doing because, you know, so, but they had to figure out a way to make the American storyline make sense with what we were seeing from the Japanese actor.
Oh,
so
it's my God.
It's the Japanese. It's the Japanese actors that are doing all of the fighting and all of those stunts and all of the stuff with the monsters and stuff. None of the American actors ever do any of that.
That's so funny. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you should go on a deep dive because I'm explaining the first season very poorly and I'm trying to do it from memory. But go on a deep dive on Wikipedia. Go look up the Japanese version of Power Rangers. And the storyline is wild.
I bet it's completely bonkers. Like, I'm not surprised that they're like reincarnated elven princes because Sailor Moon, like they were reincarnated princes and princesses of those like individual planets. Yep. Like I'm from Venus and it's like, that's literally a fireball, but okay.
Yeah.
And the moon like ran everything, which I still think is odd, but sure, whatever.
Yep. Despite the fact that there are a lot of moons in the solar system. So it's weird that Earth's moon would because
there's only one moon and it runs everything. Mm-hmm. None of the other moons were represented in any way.
Yeah. Hilarious. You would think like Jupiter would run things.
Jupiter's got like 80 moons.
It's... Yeah. Yeah.
And they're fairly large. Like yep. Jupiter was the tough one.
She had the lightning. Was she a lightning? Yeah. She was a brunette and she was totally a lesbian. And like she was very into lightning.
Yeah, and she was, like, super, super tall.
Yeah. So every now and then, like, people tag me in memes about Sailor Moon, and they get really disappointed when I... So do you remember your first time seeing a character that you were like, I like this one? Yeah.
I never saw fat characters. Never. I always had to kind of half relate to a lot of characters, so it was like... You know, slightly adventurous girls who didn't wear shoes and had red hair and liked to read books. That was just it. So it was like that was it. I think the first time I saw a fat person on TV was in Degrassi because I am Canadian. and there was a fat character in one of the first seasons of the new Degrassi. And she was a plus size model and she was a plus size model for Torrid in real life. So it was like it was real. She barely got anything. She had to leave the show after her boyfriend abused her. It was so lame, but I was so excited to see a real fat girl. She's Canadian. We almost look alike. Like it was wild. I was already too old to be watching Degrassi. Like I was 16 and they were 13-year-olds, like, but whatever.
Hey, Degrassi's big for the gay kids in the US too. They had, what was it? Ricky Wilson?
Oh my God.
Whatever
his
name is. Yeah.
Degrassi is still going and I'm like, psyched about it. Like,
see, like mine for me, the first time I ever felt seen was, I mean, aside from all of the many superhero shows that I used to watch, was Queer as Folk that I got to like secretly buy the seasons when I was in college and like watch them.
Loved that show. I loved it. I think about it all the time.
It doesn't really age well.
It ages so bad.
It's very white and very like, yeah, and it paints a bleak picture of HIV AIDS and like,
which was so huge in the 90s. Like,
yeah,
kids these days don't know anything about AIDS, and I'm like, how's that fucking possible?
Like, it's not a thing. And like, if you are positive, like, your life is not, and that's great. That's
amazing.
Awesome.
It's just
wonderful.
The
problem is, like, you look back at like older shows that dealt with like a real gritty version of like real life HIV/AIDS issues, and it's like some of the ways that we discussed this were not healthy. Are not healthy. All that to say, I love the show, and it means a lot to me.
You know what? I loved it so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved it so much. I still like. My friend and I were listening to 90s club hits like not long ago, and we found a playlist called Jesus is Gay, and we're like, this sounds like exactly what we want. And it was.
Yep.
It was all RuPaul and some of the other drag queens that had been on, and then like the Scissor Sisters and a shit ton of Britney Spears.
Yes.
Thank you. A few Cher hits in there.
I'm here for that. I'm here for all of it. I'm here for every little bit of it.
I was transported to Queer as Folk, and I was dancing on that shitty, gross dance floor. Clubs used to be so disgusting. Awesome.
So can I ask you, the only thing that I was told specifically that you have to talk about on this episode is Sabrina.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The new Sabrina?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
the only thing, like, literally, like, because I was asking some people, like, hey, is there anything that I definitely need to talk about? And the one and all, they were like, okay, I know that you're going to talk about, like, the social issues and blah, 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 because I've already got that. I need to hear her thoughts on the chilling adventures of Sabrina.
That's funny. It's funny because I just, like, every time I watch it, I, like, live tweet it, and it's so, people get so mad. But that show has so much camp going on, which I so appreciate. Mm-hmm. I love cheesy and shitty. I'm so into it. But I cannot figure out what I'm supposed to feel from this show. Or, like, I don't know. I feel like it's constantly going towards a direction I think I'll love. And then it takes this sharp right turn, mm-hmm. and I have no idea where we are.
Yeah.
I also think that whoever is doing their, like, Wikipedia searching is, like, falling asleep on the job. It's just so silly. And I read the comic books, and I almost kind of wish they'd stuck with that a little bit more. Yes. I dug the comic books.
So his name's Joshua Conkle. And
He's cool.
I was going to say, he's quite cool.
He's so fucking cool. And I just, like, I love so many things about the show. Just, like, stupid Riverdale. I got so hooked on Riverdale so bad.
I posted this the other day, but I'm like, how has that show both been on for only 3 years and also, like, definitely 10 years?
Oh, my God. Like
if you held a gun to my head and asked me how long Riverdale has been on the air and I said 10 years.
Forever. It's always
been on. The person with the gun would be like, yeah, I mean, probably.
I mean, it started right after Twin Peaks, right? Like, yeah, it did. It totally has just been that the whole time.
Yeah.
I love the campiness of Sabrina, and I love a lot of the actors. I think they're awesome. I love the aunts so much.
Okay, so my personal opinion about Sabrina is that everybody else is doing acting. The problem is, Kira, whatever. Why are some of these shows cursed with, like, lead actors who are just, like...
Yikes.
It's rough. Like, I'm sure she's nice, and I'm sure there's a role out there for her. It's not this baby doll. There's something about the way that she characterizes Sabrina that just comes off, like, whiny and petulant.
She's just so not a Scorpio at all.
Okay, I have some things to say. First of all.
If you're going to do a witch show and shit like that, like, this bitch ain't a Scorpio. You needed someone who can act like a Scorpio. She's not it.
I have some things because you talk a lot about astrology. So let's get into this, honey.
I love it.
Let's discuss. I need to know, on a scale of, like, 1 to I don't go outside without the stars telling me it's okay. Like, how much stock do you actually put? Like, actually.
You know what I did today? After I checked out my, my, like, horoscopes and my transits and all of that.
I can't.
I do my, like, daily tarot reading in the morning, right? I do both. It said, you know, take care of, like, financial issues and taxes. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I literally went and mailed my taxes today because astrology told me it was a good time. They've needed to go in for 100 years and it's been sitting there just finished mm-hmm. for half that time at least. So yeah, astrology really pushes me. I think about astrology every second of the day. Like, I drank the Kool-Aid and I only talk about it maybe like 80% of the time. So I think I'm doing real good. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. It's a solid gold obsession.
Okay. So obsession. I just like,
I know. It's hard. I didn't put too much stock in astrology either. It's just one day mm-hmm. I read it. I was reading it. Yep. I had been kind of curious to read more mm-hmm. just so I could understand what the fuck astrology was talking about. And it made all these stupid things click into place in my brain. And now I can't get rid of it. I can't get it out of there.
I don't understand a goddamn thing about... I mean, like, I understand the basics. I mean, you can't be pagan this long and not understand the basics.
You know what planets mean? Yeah, yeah. The sure. very basics are so easy.
But, like, It's a little crazy.
It's
a little Barnum statement-y. Like, everything applies to everyone.
It does. But see, I'm kind of already like that. Like I'm one of those people that's always like looking for things that connect and like signs. I used to joke that I'm just like the guy in A Beautiful Mind, but I know that joke's not super funny anymore.
No, that doesn't age well.
It doesn't. No. But I'm someone who sees connections and signs in a lot of different things. So it wasn't that far of a leap for me. But I will admit that it's like an obsession. It really gets into your head. Once it clicks there, you just start seeing it everywhere. Like I'm seeing little astrology formulas. This is what it must feel like to be good at math, because it's like all the little symbols are just like making up the world. Like it's the
matrix. I really want to be good at math.
I'm not good at
math. That seems so fun to be good at math, because nobody's good at math. And if you're just like the person that's like, oh yeah, I can absolutely divide this dinner check by 12 without using the calculator on my phone and add
those
tip.
People are superheroes. That's what
I hate.
That's
those
that
people
is. They're superheroes. I've been flunking out of math since I don't even know how long. It's just I've never been good. So astrology was never my bag because it was too mathy. It's not as mathy as it looks, not now with computers.
What's the most problematic show out there that you would die on the hill of this is also good?
Oh God, everything I like is so awful.
What's like the most problematic thing you love that you're just like, okay, this is terrible, and I'm fairly sure it's both racist and homophobic, but I'm also a huge fan.
Oh my God, you know what? I don't know if this is the biggest, but there's two that I watch all the time that I think of, and one of them is That 70s Show, because it's about the 70s. Taking place.
I keep
like,
wanting to do a rewatch of That 70s Show. Does it hold up?
Yeah, because it's the 70s. And the 70s were like cool, but also like a terrible time for a lot of this, right?
Okay, does it freak you out that if they were to do That 70s Show today and it would be the same time period apart, that it would be about the time period from 2000 to 2005?
Yeah, that's horrifying.
Does that upset you in any kind of meaningful way? Because
Can you imagine a show where like the characters are kind of dressed like Paris Hilton and they're stealing their dad's car so they can go to the latest Backstreet Boys concert. Like, it's so wild to think of, but I would watch the hell out
of that
show.
It's really easy for me to imagine that, because that's what Instagram is these days.
Right.
Instagram is like the VSCO girl, and all that the VSCO girl is what the girls in my high school wore after they got done with volleyball practice.
With the
scrunchies and like the oversized tee and the short shorts and like long blown out hair. I'm like, I don't know how that's a fashion statement. That's just what we wore on the weekend.
I know. Like acid wash denim backpacks with like smiley face patches. What the fuck? Where's my Walkman?
And like the skinny eyebrows and the butterfly. And I'm like, we don't do this anymore for a reason, baby doll. Like it doesn't.
So waiting for Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie to come back with The Simple Life. Like,
okay, I would watch that.
I would watch it.
I would watch the shit out of some Simple Life reunion, mostly because Nicole Richie has become like an unproblematic queen.
She's a grown up. Yeah,
she's
like
a
real
full on grown up, and Paris Hilton has regressed.
And she chilled out for a little while, and now she just like...
I would love nothing more than to watch those two come together. And Nicole's just like... Mm.
I also very much want a Britney Spears like reality show. I don't even like reality TV.
Okay,
I like Britney Spears reality. I want to follow her.
Do you remember that she had one?
I don't. It doesn't even matter anymore. I want one now.
I do too. Mostly because like she's chilled all the way out, and
she's
I feel really
so
bad
good.
For her, because like she can't do anything because her freaking like horrible dad has her in this conservatorship that they just won't let, like her and Kesha. Like I'm like, give, like I'm gonna give some
let
March of Dimes money to like some Kesha and Britney.
Just throw it. Yeah, Britney Spears is like, I don't know, it's weird. I never thought my little wanker self in like high school never would have thought I'd grow up to be like, oh, Britney Spears is so relatable. But like that breakdown that she had in 2007.
I so get it. I fully
now,
get it.
Yeah. I'm like, it's like looking in a damn mirror. I was this close to shaving off all my hair and beating someone with an umbrella. Like that seemed like a totally logical thing to
there
do.
There have fully been days when I'm just like, I just want to shave my head and beat someone with an umbrella, because that just looks That just looks cathartic. So freeing. Oh my God, that's so cathartic. Like, yeah. I want to go to one of those places where you can like pay to break dishes.
I know, but they're so expensive. I'm like, you know, who has more problems? Poor people. Okay, we need to be able to afford this. Fucking rich people get to throw axes.
You can go to Dollar Tree and spend like $20 and get 20 plates and then just smash them.
Find yourself a really gross alley. Most of the ones at the Dollar Tree are like plastic now.
Oh, that's sad.
Cheaping out.
That's sad.
Oh, I love the dollar store.
I do too. What are you excited about coming out? So let's see. What's new? What's out? What are you about to binge? Lock and Key.
Yeah, that's on Netflix right now, isn't it?
Yep.
It's on my list. There is a show coming out on Freeform about witches, and
the thing where they're
the soldiers, yes. Motherland. I gotta see what this is about.
It's gonna be a dumpster fire. There is no chance.
You know,
there is zero chance this is quality content.
I have no idea.
This fully says, like, this is one season. This is going to be one season, and it's going to be a dumpster fire start to finish, and I am going to be all the way obsessed.
I'm going to watch every single episode.
Twice. Every single episode.
I just can't. I personally cannot see where the fuck they're going with this. I can't see.
Nope. But
there's got to be some sort of, like, I just don't think politically we're in a place where being a loyal patriotic American, whether you're a witch or not, is like what people totally want to see. Mm-hmm.
That's not a good vibe for 2020. That's not a good look.
The people who want to see that are not watching witchy TV shows.
No.
So that can't be all there is. There's got to be something else there. So I'm going to watch the hell out of that.
Who's your favorite thirst trap right now?
Oh my God, I don't even know.
Is it Gavin Leatherwood? And would you like to watch him baste a turkey?
I love that video because it's so awkward. He is super hot. I love guys with that nice, thick black hair.
Mm-hmm. Have I mentioned my love of Tom Welling? Do you sense a theme? There's a theme.
They look like the good Disney prince, which is Prince Eric. They all look like him with that beautiful wave and a little bit of a tan and the shirt open just a bit. I love him so much, but I just watched The Magicians. Yes. Got addicted to the fucking Magicians. And that lead guy,
the one who plays Quentin?
Yes. Uh-huh. Okay. Started off that show, I hated him. I hated everything about him. I hated Quentin. I hated everything. By the end, I was fully in love with this guy. Like lusting over his hair, and I just like, I do not understand how it happened, but he totally won me over.
Yeah, I remember, so I read the books like years ago when they came out.
Were they fun?
Are
they really good?
They're very good. They're very dark. They don't share much with the show. The first season it looks like somebody took the book and walked around the studio once with the book. For the first season, and that's about it. It has gone way off.
They just take the idea. They don't really use the book.
Well, they sort of reference the fact that they have gone off, because sometimes they reference the fact that this is an alternate universe version of what happened in those books. Because they'll call some of the characters, like, the names from the book.
Yeah.
Like Margot instead of Jessie or whatever her name is. Quentin is sort of written like if Harry Potter went to college, did a lot of Molly, and got like really into like
hanging out with his gay best friend at a frat.
Just really into like, I'm just like, you know, he goes to a lot of like feminist conferences. Like, you know, Quentin is just like done with, it's very like millennial ennui.
I hated him so much.
Yeah, the show sort of builds him back up, but he's sort of built in the books to be like the opposite of an everyman character.
Yeah, he's so cocky and he thinks he's so different, but he's like absolutely not. And it drives me nuts. And then by the end, it's completely different. And that's all Elliot's doing because Elliot is the king of that entire show. I love him.
Yes.
And I want him to be in every single thing I watch from now on.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know who he is, but he's fantastic.
Paige.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming onto this show and blessing me with your presence. So apparently, according to time travel, your book comes out today.
I know.
It's in bookstores right now.
It could be in a bookstore near you right this minute.
You should take off your head. You should pull over because obviously you're in a minivan, Karen. Get out. Find a Barnes & Noble. Get this book and all of the copies on the bookshelf. Give them to everyone you know.
Just spread them around. I'm so excited. I'm so excited. So time travel wise, you know, a couple weeks back, aka today, aka a couple weeks ago, I actually took some copies of my book and I wrapped them up and I wrote a little press release and I brought them to the local witchy shops and had my sister deliver them because I was not going in there. And like, I'm so excited about the book. And I think when I see it in a store, I'm going to start to cry. Like, I want to take a picture of the shelf. It's like, it's my dream, my witchy dream, witchy book. One day I'll sell it in my witchy bookshop.
It is a phenomenal experience. It's a phenomenal ride you're about to go on. I mean, I will tell you, there is nothing cooler than like walking into Barnes & Noble and that's my name.
So crazy.
And the book signing, that's my photo, and there's my book, and there's the table where I will be signing, but that is just the coolest feeling.
I just, it still gives me goosebumps. It's so wild. I don't even know what to say, but it's crazy.
What was the hardest thing about writing the book? What is the coolest thing you learned about yourself writing the book?
The hardest thing about writing the book was how little I slept while I was writing the book.
A month. There are so many people out there right now screaming at their speakers, she wrote a whole book in a month!
Like, literally, I slept 2 hours every 48 hours. Like, it was just, I was mostly in my bed with the laptop just typing furiously the entire time and also swearing furiously. But you know what? And I don't want to say it was easy because it wasn't. I honestly did not think I could do it. I didn't think I could do it at all. I was like, there's no way I'm going to pull this off. About after I finished writing it for sure, I was like, oh my God, maybe I can actually do this. My writing in general has gotten a lot better. I am hopefully becoming slightly less wordy, though probably not. But it's just like, it was like I didn't realize how much I knew. I had no idea. I'm pretty smart, it turns out. And I guess I really have been paying attention all these years doing the podcast. I just had no idea how capable I was, I guess, as a witch. I still felt like a beginner, I think, until I wrote the book. And then I was like, oh, shit.
The crazy thing is, like, once you get into your 30s and you've been doing this for a while, and, like, if somebody asks for advice, then you have some and you kind of surprise yourself because you're like, one, I had advice, period. Two, it was good.
That was good advice.
Write that
down, yeah.
When did that happen?
It's like all of a sudden I'm grown up.
Yeah. When you look around because you're like, I really need an adult. And you're like, oh, shit.
No, I'm the adult. Yeah.
That's not a good look.
Writing the book totally made me realize that I am a grown up and have been for much longer than I realized.
Yeah.
So that's nice. That's a nice feeling, sort of.
Congratulations. I wish you all the best success. You don't need my wishes because you are doing all of the right things. I am so excited for you. I am so glad that you are out there, that you are doing your thing, that you are out there being the fat feminist witch, and that people are tuning in and loving it and sharing it and joining your community and just spreading that nuanced version of being a pagan in the modern day. For folks that want to listen to your show, how do they find you?
Well, they can find me on anywhere they listen to podcasts. So Spotify, iTunes, you can go directly to Podbean and do it from there, of course, because I love them. And you can also find me all across social media. Just look up The Fat Feminist Witch. It's no doubt going to be me. And my website is thefatfeministwitch.com. Like I said, if you want to find out a little bit about Green Witchcraft, the book specifically, especially if you're a shop owner, you can just go to thefatfeministwitch.com/greenwitchcraft. And it has all the information there. I really want people to be able to buy it at their local witchy shops. Yeah. I really want that because that's kind of where I want the money to go.
Well,
get all the local witches.
I'm so glad for you. Thank you so much for being here. Go out and buy the book, everybody.
Go buy the book. You're going to love it. It's fun. There's fun exercises, and you've been listening to me share them on my podcast for the last 2 weeks. So I hope people like it.
Well, I'm sure they will. Thank you so much, and congratulations again.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having me on the show. This was really fun.
Good. I'm glad. This was fun for me, too.
This was really fun.
I'm excited. I hope you'll come back.
Yeah, I totally will. This is, it's neat being on these older, not older, but these podcasts I listened to at the beginning of my podcasting journey. I know. I'm so sorry.
I mean, the shade.
Some of these more classical shade.
It's exciting for me to be on these old podcasts.
You know what? I said the same thing to Corey, and I felt like such a dick after. I just mean that. I'm so glad you're
still
here.
I'm going to take my walker and go to my living room and sit and watch the Golden Girls and knit.
I'm going to make us all grow up a little bit faster.
Oh, wow. You know, if the math that I'm doing in my head, we are the same age, ma'am.
We probably are the same age. I was born in 1986.
So was I.
Yeah, we're the same age. You got into the podcasting like way earlier than I did.
Yeah, I had a lot of hubris and a lot of opinions and way too much access to the internet.
Yeah, I didn't gain any hubris until after college. I feel like that's where I learned it. Before that, I was just very low key and like good to hang out in the background. Not so much anymore.
Well, rioters, that's going to do it here for episode 137, Inciting a Fat Feminist Riot. I am so grateful that Paige came and did this fun discussion on lots of different topics that make me smile, and I thought it was a pretty fun time to get to talk to her. So all sorts of notes about where you can find Paige are going to be in the show notes on incitingariot.com. You can email me, or you can use the contact form on the website, but it's Firelight, Firelyte at incitingariot.com. Twitter, that's twitter.com/incitingariot, just at incitingariot. Facebook, Inciting a Riot Podcast. Find me, Firelight. All the things, all the places. You know how to get in touch with me by now. And again, just letting you know that if you do want to support the show, you can give as little as $1 a month on patreon.com/incitingprojects. Lots of cool stuff, lots of ways to say thank you are coming there. Anyways, thank you guys so much. I'm going to leave you, but as always, I will leave you with love and light, Firelight.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.